this episode of the Wisco Weekly Podcast, I am joined by Adam Parada, a former graduate of UC Irvine, former basketball player at UC Irvine, former professional Mexican national basketball player, former Sacramento Kings, LA Lakers player. He's played throughout the NBA, throughout the D-League, throughout overseas, in Mexico, you name it. He has now joined the ranks of the car business, and he's going to share with us what it was like, and, well, he's going to parallel for us what it was like to play professional sports and how that translates to the car business. So stay tuned. Come on back now, you hear? Chicken brown cow, what's going on, people? This is Dennis Wisco, your host of Wisco Weekly. I'm in the household of my guest here, which I'm very excited to have this discussion and bring you some of this knowledge and share some of his insights. So let's get right into it. It's been said often that the car business is just like sports. Both are competitive. You are part of a team. There are winners and losers, among others. So what happens when you actually have a former professional athlete in the car business? Joining me today is 7 foot tall Adam Parada. Adam is originally from Altaloma, California, and attended and played at UC Irvine from 2000 to 2004. He ranks number 4 in the school's history for rebounds and 8th in career scoring. After college, Adam played professionally overseas and in Mexico for the next 12 years. He earned a spot on the Mexican national team for the 2011 Pan American Games, where his team won the silver medal behind Puerto Rico and ahead of the United States. Undoubtedly, Adam is a talented player. He has great footwork, great hands, great head, he has a great touch, and maybe to the despisement of his coaches, used more of his brain than his brawn. Naturally, he is a tall person, but in the game of basketball, he had to learn how to play like a big man. In the world of sports, challenges always await, and working in the car business poses a new challenge for Adam. Will the customers and his managers put on a full court press, or will the business be a slam dunk? Let's find out. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Wow, what an intro, man.
Well, I found it only appropriate. Again, maybe just a little background for the listeners. You and I actually have our paths have crossed a few different times. We both went to college together at UC Irvine, then also in the same fraternity. While you were playing on the team, I was the lowly little manager on the team. Excuse me, Mr. Adam Parada, how can I help you? But obviously, you went on to great big things and playing abroad. So, you know, it's been a minute since we last caught up.
Right.
Tell me about your experiences playing abroad.
Well, man. So, where do I start? After we graduated, mm-hmm. I hired an agent. Okay. And I kind of just latched on an agent that was experienced, and he had other guys. He had a stable of guys that were, like myself, breaking out of the D-League or getting drafted out of college. Mm. His main guy was, what was his name? Rafael Araujo out of BYU. Mm-hmm. And that was probably his highest pick out of the NBA draft. It was, I think, number 8, 2004. Okay. Anyway, so
did you find him or he found you?
I had a mentor, I guess you could say, mentor slash trainer that got me in touch with him.
Okay.
And so wherever Rafael went on a NBA workout, I tagged along. Okay. I was his scoring dummy, you know?
Okay.
Is what the, you know, what they
was
call
he a good
it.
Player?
Great player.
Okay.
Great college player. Maybe drafted a little bit too high, you know, because he ended up playing himself out of the NBA within 3 years or so.
Okay.
But anyways, so I kind of latched on wherever he went, I went. And I was supposed to just get scored on and, you know, but I ended up playing him really well, shooting well. And I got noticed by a few teams, and one of those teams being the Sacramento Kings.
Mm-hmm.
went to their summer league, did well. It was myself and a couple other guys got picked to play the preseason. Mm-hmm. So did the preseason thing and did really well. I thought I was going to make the team, didn't. And there goes my that's where I started my NBA career. I mean my overseas career. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
and then overseas, you went at first to was it Jordan?
Yes.
Okay. What was it like playing in Jordan?
Oh, it was great.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was a huge change. Right after that, I went to an ABA team.
Okay.
And then D League. I did the whole ABA D League thing. And then that summer after that, I did about, say, 7 or 8 NBA camps, mini camps.
Is going through the D League and the ABA, is this similar to some of the horror stories you would hear about, like, with minor league baseball in a sense of, like, it's a shit ton of hours and very low pay, and it's one of those things you have to understand, you just have to put in the work with the hopes and dreams that you will get drafted?
It was that, and then your agent telling you, man, you're right there, keep it going, you know? Mm. But coming from college and getting $3,000 a month in your pocket, you don't have any expenses. They pay for all your food, all your hotels, so I had no other responsibilities mm-hmm. other than my cell phone. So mm-hmm. at that time, it wasn't a big deal. Were there horror stories? Nah, not really. At that point, no.
So wait, I'm curious. Oh, God, sorry. I think I just broke your chair. <That's okay. laughs> Sorry about that. So you had mentioned that, you know, you had your agent always kind of giving you these words of encouragement. Was it always kind of like that then? Where was the atmosphere very optimistic going through, the yeah, ranks of the...
Definitely. Like, you know, because he, of course, wants to make his money as well.
Yeah.
All right. And that's getting a big contract, whether it's there or overseas. And he wouldn't leave me in the D League for too long because mm-hmm. he's not getting paid much. Mm-hmm. If anything, I don't even remember him making any money off that. I was right there on the cusp of jumping over to a 10-day contract with, I believe at the time it was the Sonics.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Nate McMillan, his coach, and he was, I was just, you don't want anybody to get hurt. But then, it's kind of like catch-22. You don't want people to get hurt, but then if they do, you're there to take their place.
Yeah, right. Okay. I see what you're saying. So in terms of that 10-day contract, you don't want anyone to get hurt that's currently on the roster, but at the same time, yeah, it presents an opportunity, though,
exactly,
for you.
Yeah. Exactly. So, that putting in that kind of work got you ready for basketball overseas, because that's where the stories really start.
Okay.
Playing overseas in Jordan. It's a gym that's about 25, 30 degrees, freezing. Got another one like that in China where I went for a tryout, and it was literally got off the plane, 3 feet of snow outside. There is not a door from outside the gym to inside the gym. It's a curtain, a thick curtain, not even a door.
From the outside to the gym a curtain to separate that curtain, weather?
Yes. So inside, the floor was, how do you explain it? It didn't have that extra cushion,
like,
that extra spring that a lot of gyms here in the States have. And it was just hard. It was hard as a rock. And
was it still kind of the, I mean, like you can still pivot on there.
No,
like
it was wooden floor, but it was just thin and cold.
Okay.
And you could feel it, every time you felt like cement. So, and then I remember having my sweater on and sweats on, getting warmed up. And as soon as I took those off, man. But, you have the coaches there. And mind you, the coach and the owner sitting there smoking a cigarette. As I'm running up and down, getting my shots up, trying to get warmed up, they're smoking. I was like, it was a culture shock right away, first day. But I did well. They ended up keeping me for about 2 weeks as a practice player in China.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, this is in 2004, right after I graduated as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So here's a funny story about that. I didn't know. No one told me. I took about 7 suitcases to China.
Wait, are you being facetious when you say 7?
No. I'll count the guitar case as the 7th suitcase. Yeah. And, you know, now knowing you only need one, maybe two.
Right.
Suitcase, you know.
Yeah.
Shoes, basketball, half a suitcase, basketball shoes, the other half, you know, clothes.
And I presume this was your first time traveling.
Yes. First time.
Okay.
You know, nobody, I didn't ask anybody. I probably should ask, you know, what should you take? What should we bring? No, I brought my whole closet. I brought everything. I brought my whole life and my guitar. Yeah.
Wow.
Which I thought, I was like, you know, I'm going to be in China. I'm going to learn how to play my guitar really well.
Yeah.
I could play basic stuff, but I was like, I'm really going to play, you know. I took everything. So we had to take two taxis from the airport just to get all my stuff to the hotel. And then I get sent home about 8 days later.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I'll tell you what. So, you know, on one hand, the optimistic environment you are in, I don't know if now being in the car business, you might be experiencing also kind of a different culture shock in a sense of, I don't know if your managers, which would be the same as kind of like your agent, maybe your coach, would also embody this type of, again, optimistic attitude towards you. I mean, of course, yes, I'm sure they're there to support you, but at the same time, I'm sure you're starting to almost experience a little bit more of that basketball court in China where you had the coach smoking. It's almost like, you know, now you get into the car business. Now it's like, okay, you're here. You got to kind of fend for yourself. Go do it.
It's kind of funny how I got in the car business. Do you have a minute?
Yeah.
All right. So as I'm preparing to retire, finishing up my last season in Mexico this past year, and I told my wife, I said, you know, I want to be a cop. It's something I've always wanted to do. I want to be a police officer. Let's start the process. So around January 2017, New Year's Day, I start submitting applications to Irvine Police Department, Huntington Beach, Newport, Anaheim, Fullerton, just tons of departments.
Mm-hmm.
I get back from... that's my daughter in the background, sorry.
What's your daughter's name?
Layla.
Yeah.
Okay, so I get back from Mexico, come. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get hired right away. It's going to be my pick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these departments are going to want, you know, me, blah, blah, blah. Well, I go to an orientation in Buena Park Police Department, and there's about 250 people there.
Wowzers.
And they're like, yeah, we're hiring two people. And it's going to be, you know, we're not hiring for another 2 months. The academy is going to start in another 4 to 5 months. The background, because the background, and that takes a while, and the paperwork. And I was like, holy shit. Like, what am I going to do between now and then? Because, you know, the money we made, my wife and I made, we invested it all, all of it. Like, we put all of our eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have enough income to last me 5 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I said, I got to do something. So I'm driving back on the way back from Buena Park Police Department, and I see a Nissan sign off the 91 freeway. And I just moved here to Corona.
Oh, okay. That's in Corona. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I just moved here.
Okay.
5, 6 days earlier. I said, you know what? I have a Titan. I love Nissan. I've always had Nissans. Let's go check it out.
Okay.
So just make a right off the exit. Boom, I'm there. Get off. I get upped by a salesman and I'm like, are you guys hiring? He said, no, we're not. But come inside anyways. I said, all right. So I walk inside and he introduced me to the manager. It's my cousin.
What?
It's my cousin. I have 35 first cousins, right?
Okay.
We got a big Mexican family.
Okay.
And I knew he was in the car business. No idea he was working at this car dealership.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
No idea. He was at Kia for 10 years before that. So he comes out, hey, primo, what's up? How you doing? Da, da, da. I'm like, I'm here for a job. He's like, what? He's like, all right, come tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's how I started.
Nice.
Yeah. So no interview, just came in. He just filled out the paperwork and boom.
So we're talking January here then?
No, this was April 17th.
That's my birthday.
Oh,
April. Okay, so you started in April.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's fast forward, months until today.
Yeah.
Tell me about your car business experience.
Okay, so I'm doing all my training, all certification, and you know, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be an easy transition. you know, I like people. They say you have to be a people person. You don't have to be a salesman. Just as long as they like you as a person and you know, product knowledge a little bit, you know, you'll do well. Well, my first customer was my dad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's usually everybody's first customer. That's right. Family member.
Well, let me ask you that. I mean, was that encouraged by them? Or did that just happen kind of naturally?
It was naturally. My dad was...
He was already looking for a car.
He was already looking.
I mean, when I first started, I worked at a Toyota store, and that was definitely one of the first things that your managers tell you. It was like, okay, the first thing you do is contact all your family, right. all your friends, sell them a car.
Yeah, it kind of happened organically because he contacted me. They said, oh, you're working at Nissan? I was just at a Nissan dealership yesterday. I was going to buy a Frontier. I was like, what?
Hmm. No.
So they ended up coming down.
And you pounded him too, right?
No. I didn't know what was going on. I just kind of relied on the managers and my cousin.
And your cousin, yeah, right.
And I just said, you know, I don't want to make any commission. I just want, they said, well, that's impossible. You know, you have to take at least
the minimum, the mini.
Yeah. Which at the time I think was $100 or something. Anyway, so I did that. And then on May 1st, they let me loose. They said, all right, go. And I sold 17 cars my first month.
Damn.
Yeah, everybody thought I was getting spooned.
Yeah.
You know, what's the secret? What's going on? You know, is your cousin
doing... Did you lead the board at that?
No, we had a guy named Virgil, and he's been there 15 years.
Okay.
And at that point, no one had dethroned him for years because he just had to, you know, repeat. He doesn't even get on the phones. Let's put it that
it's
way.
It's all referral business.
It's
for
all
him.
Referral. Mm-hmm. Every day, people coming in. It's Virgil here. Virgil here. We're like, oh shit, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, God forbid anybody try to skate him. But so he kind of took me under his wing. I learned all little tricks quick, and you know, apart from all the other green peas, I had a lot of life experience.
Yeah. Right.
And I think I used that to my advantage to excel in the car business, and it just kept getting better after that month. And next month I had 20. Next month after that I had 23, and pretty soon I you know, midsummer I was making around $15,000 a month in selling Nissan. And you know, everybody, even the manager, saying, "What are you doing? What's the secret?" And you know, that they really pounded us on the steps of the sale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to do a meet and greet. And then, you know, we trained every day for, you know, at least 15, 20 minutes on doing a walk around, doing that kind of stuff. And just, that's where I make the connection with basketball is, you know, you can be as good as you really want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what you're doing, it's the effort you put into it, the time you have to be there. You know, if you want to just clock in and work the minimum hours, or are you going to stay overtime? You're going to come in on your days off. You're going to do what Kobe did. You know, it was Mamba Day yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had their own little stories of what he, you know, getting there on the track at 5 a.m. and then going to practice after that. And then taking a nap and then coming back in the afternoon and getting up, you know, 500 shots.
Yep.
And I saw that firsthand, too, from Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
I saw
That's
him
right.
do that.
Yep. Yeah. You played with them, probably against them, right? But you played
with
them
against. Yes,
you had a little stint on the Lakers as well.
Yeah, in 2005, I was invited to the camp.
Yeah.
And that kind of was a weird story as well. But that's when Phil Jackson came back to the Lakers in 2005, and it was a favor from my agent. They said, just check this kid out. He's, you know, he's supposed to be really good. He's still blooming, 7 feet tall. He's getting bigger. Mexico national team, yada yada. And they said, "All right." So we go down there as a favor. And this was late September. They already had their team set up for preseason, and they're just doing it as a favor. And I show up, and I'm putting my socks on, and I have holes in my socks, literally holes in my socks. And the equipment manager comes over, and he's like, hands me some new socks, and. And I was, you know, I was kind of embarrassed, but
the NBA socks,
the nice ones,
yeah.
$15 pair of socks, yeah. So I put a few of those on, and boom, I had the best workout of my life. I swear to God.
So is that kind of one of the mantras you live by in the car business too? Yeah, just all you need is a great pair of socks, and after that, everything is on your own.
Yeah, it's just I think at that time I was reading a book. I can't remember the name of it. but it said, you know what? There's only five people going to cry at your funeral, right?
Okay.
Most of your friends are not going to be there, you know, because depending on when you die, most of your friends are not going to be there. And 3 to 5 people will cry at your funeral. Probably mm-hmm. your mom, if your mom's still alive, or mm-hmm. your wife or your kids. Other than that, fuck it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not really my mantra, but that's something like who cares what everybody else thinks? You know, just put it all out there. And you can use that in sales too. Like, you're going to get rejected over and over again in life, in sales, and whatever you're doing. Just F it.
Just right.
Keep going, because in the end, five people crying at you.
Well, I think if anything, it puts it definitely, you know, I think it's always when you're working in sales, it's always fairly common to try to have an attitude of, okay, fuck it, I just got to do the work, I just have to do it, just fuck it, yeah. Don't worry about the rejection, right?
Yeah.
But then when you start to put it in the context of, yes, look, at the very end of the day, at the end of your life, when you're laying on your deathbed, and if you're able to have some like transcendental experience and look out who's there, then yes, there's only 3 to 5 people there that are crying for you. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters. Exactly. So after that, fuck it.
Yeah.
So I would definitely agree. Putting in that context, I can see then how, you know, at least for those first initial months and probably till this day, how, yes, your head is just down and you're just grinding it, you know, each and every day, and everybody else is looking upon you, which now, again, this kind of draws the similarities of sports, where when you are pushing out those many cars, yes, you're a workhorse, you are performing. And when people are asking, hey, how are you doing this? They're like the fans watching you now of, Adam, how are you taking these ups? How are you putting these cars together? You're doing 2 deals. You did 3 deals on a Monday. Like, what are you doing? But so I'm certain, though, there's also a, you know, getting into the car business, almost like sports, is there's a good old boys club, right? It's a very male dominated industry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would almost liken this to where if all the guys go out to a bar, always the guy that gets hit on by the girls is always going to be the tallest. So has your height worked out for you?
Definitely.
Explain.
Definitely. It's a great icebreaker. You know, people walk into a car dealership, arms crossed, hands in the pockets, closed off, you know, oh, these guys aren't going to take advantage of me. And it's a way to connect to somebody, because most everybody likes sports.
Mm-hmm.
Most everybody likes, you know, tall people, or, you know, tall jokes or whatever. And I open it up by making fun of myself, or I don't know if I'm going to fit in this Versa, and then boom, I fit in it, and I know how to adjust the seats and the steering wheel. I'm like, wow, you know, the guy's like, oh, I'm 6'2", I can't fit in the Sentra. I'm like, watch this, boom, boom, you know. Or you know, most of my clients are Hispanic,
mm-hmm.
from Mexico, and you know, I'll make that connection with them right away by asking them where they're from, and telling them, you know, my dad's from Mexico. I played for the Mexico national team 13 years. I got this, that medal, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then that opens me up as not as a salesman anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm a person working here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like you, you know, mm-hmm. I'm like you, as, you know, I come from the same background. I just happen to be here selling cars, and I'm your friend. I'm your friend now, you know, and that definitely helps.
Until you lace them up. So then when does it start to get quote unquote competitive then? When does it start to get to the point where it's like, okay, or does it? Like, do you start to view the process of, you know, so now you're kind of in that introductory part of developing rapport. Hey, you know, you've come to Nissan of Corona. I'm one of the players. I'm signing autographs, kind of thing. And then balls tossed up, whistles blown, and now you're into it. Does that kind of start to take effect? That, okay, now this is more performance. Now I got to get you into a car. How does that trend, or does that transition occur?
The competitiveness? Are you talking about?
Yeah, sure. The competitiveness. Yeah.
Well, I'd say no.
Okay.
Not really. It just kind of let it happen. Most people, they tell us, you know, someone's walking on a car lot, they're either going to buy from you or from somebody else mm-hmm. within the next couple weeks. Mm-hmm. I forgot what this statistic was. Even if they say they're not looking, you know, those are my best customers. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we don't want to buy today. Boom.
Right.
You know, okay, sure. Right. Let me just show you what we have.
There. Right.
Not, you know, I'm not going to bother you guys. Just over here.
The I mean, those are the customers that they're just talking themselves out of doing right. it when right. they really do want to do it.
Just handling the objections, mm-hmm. and, you know, and then not pressuring on them all. Just, you know, okay, oh, yeah, you know, no problem. You know, let me just show you where the used car lot is. And then all these cars are locked, mm-hmm. but I have this little clicker here that's going to unlock them. So mm-hmm. let me know if you... No, just no pressure at all. And then if they do have questions, and you know, I'll be there to help them. But as far as the being competitive, we have this board, like I'm sure most dealerships are, and this is the only dealership I've ever worked at. So I'm not sure how other ones deal, but there's a scoreboard, yeah. everybody's name, squares, you get a full unit, you get a full square, you get a half unit, you get, you know, mm-hmm. and it's literally a scoreboard. You see how you're doing compared to everybody else. You go from there. I loved going in there, just putting my one or two squares up a day and watching me kick everybody's ass.
Yeah.
That's where I was competitive.
That's where you, yeah. Yeah.
You know, right. And then the hard part for me at the beginning was watching people make more of a car payment than or pretty much the same as their rent. Mm, you know, mm-hmm. and knowing that they could pay a lot less than mm-hmm. what we're the first, second pencil that we're putting out there. Mm-hmm. And because I was relating it to, you know, somebody like my mom or somebody like my dad. And then the managers had to explain to me that, you know, this is the gross profit that the car business strives on. You know, if it wasn't for this, then there would be no big dealerships. And then I thought back to when I was overseas. Tiny dealerships, maybe 7 or 8 cars there in the whole dealership. And then you'd have to pick from those, or they'd have to order one from mm-hmm. the next major mm-hmm. city over, ship it over within a week or two. And so this is the beauty of being in America. You can have a lot with 800 cars on it.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about that because, again, I think this is where perhaps sports and the car business starts to interlace a little bit more in that regard. We're going to come back. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back on the Wisco Weekly Podcast. Stay tuned. Feeling Asian? Eating Asian? Well, hire chef caterer Lionel Killens for your next event. Listen to these dishes: miso cod with roasted carrots, tempura eggplant, pickled mushrooms, and miso bagna cotta, or tuna pokey mini tostadas with avocado mousse and fried shallots. How about Korean short rib lettuce wraps with kimchi slaw and quail egg? Are you thirsty for more? Lionel caters buffets, backyard barbecues, family parties, bridal parties, birthday parties, wedding parties, cocktail parties, and divorce parties. Check him out at lionelskitchen.com. Or find him on Facebook at Lionel's Kitchen LA. Welcome back to the Wisco Weekly Podcast. Okay, Adam, so we just left off talking about how you were seeing these rocket pencils come out of your sales managers, and how then there was kind of almost like this moral dilemma. You were starting to question about the car business and how these customers were getting payments that mirrored their rent or their mortgage. Now, I think what's interesting about this is this is kind of where you start to see the car business mirror more of the sports business, right? Like you were traded from one team to another, played for this team to that team in very short durations, which, you know, at the end of the day, your agent, the general managers of these organizations, these teams, yeah, they weren't really looking at you as like Adam Parada. They were looking at you, how can you help contribute to my bottom line? So I'm curious, you know, you kind of have this moral dilemma, or you're starting to, you know, think about things a little more seriously from a morality standpoint of the car business. Where do you stand now, knowing the fact that you know, at the end of the day, you're starting, this is more of a business now, and so you kind of have to treat it as a business, and you can't almost think of it like a player anymore. You know, you have to think of it as you are now the general manager. So what is this a little bit of a struggle for you right now, or how have you coped with it?
No, yeah, definitely it is like a business, like you said. And you see guys bouncing around in this business just like you would on any team, you know, overseas, especially overseas. You have, like overseas, I'm not sure if you know, but you have one or two bad games and, you know, you're on the next flight. You're out. Mm. And, you know, with your skill level, you might get picked up again on another team or another country. And I'm starting to see that now. We went through our first management change about a month and a half ago, and they pretty much cleared everybody out. You know, there's about seven or eight guys, salesmen that stayed, but pretty much all the management is gone. All the administrative staff, they stayed. But, yeah, it's a business. It's, you know, if we don't make the money, you know, they're going to get bounced. They're going to, you know, be the next ones out. Right now I work for the Larry H. Miller Group. Great, fantastic company. They have over 62 dealerships nationwide. Yeah. And, but overall, it seems like a great family company. But at the end of the day, it's still a business, you know?
So for you then, if you were to compare some of your coworkers now, do they kind of sit a little bit more on edge knowing the fact that they could be gone next month? Whereas you've had 12 years worth of experience knowing the fact that you're always on a one-day contract with these teams. And yes, you were in China, you were there for, what was it, 7 days, and then all of a sudden you were packed up and you were ready to go home. Right. So is there a stress levels you have, or what's...
A little bit, yeah. There is, because, you know, it's a month-to-month sales job. At the end of the day, you're looking out for yourself. You know, it's a team. Of course, there's team goals. There's team dealership goals. You know, you hit this, you're going to get this bonus, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, no one else is going to put food on my table except for me. I got to hit my numbers. I got to, you know, get my triple doubles and, you know, on the basketball court. And then in this business, I got to hit at least 15 cars. That's my goal every month, at least 15 cars, no matter what. If it's a bad month, if it's recession, whatever.
Do you feel that as opposed to playing, where maybe this, you know, there, you almost didn't have so much control over your destiny, even if you had a triple double, because again, you may have a triple double, but at the same time, your pay doesn't go up because you got a triple double, right? At least in the car business, you get 15, 20, 25 cars. Well, that has a real world effect on how then you carry on your life.
I couldn't put it any better than that. I guess there is a little bit of a difference. Playing basketball, you're going to get a set salary no matter what. Matter what, if you have bad games, you know, sometimes you'd have a contract for the full season and it's guaranteed, no matter if you play every game or if you score 5 points a game, you know. But in the car business, it's month to month. And if it's about being consistent, okay? If I have three or four bad days in a row, like I did a couple weeks ago, where you sell nothing, you can't even, for whatever reason, the GM didn't send out enough flyers, or there wasn't any TV commercials this week, we got no traffic. So you have to be creative and start creating your own traffic. Going through missed appointments from the past couple months, or missed opportunities, and calling old customers for leads. You just have to be creative.
Yeah.
And in that aspect, I guess it's different from basketball, you know.
Sure. Yeah. So you have a go-getter mentality, that, of course, you know, in the world of sports, you had to have for yourself to get your contracts, to get your playing time. Now there's the other element of the car business that, you know, you called somebody up that did not show 3 months ago. They are like, yes, I'm actually in the market. Yes, I will come see you. They come see you. You do your great warm rapport. you make it funny, you make it entertaining, they're enjoying their experience. And then all of a sudden it gets to the point where you're sitting across the table and you're mm-hmm. presenting numbers and you're going back and forth. I want to role play this a little bit with you.
Okay.
All right. So
let's get the foursquare.
Well, this is going to be a little bit of a different foursquare kind of experience in that. So this is going to be more practice for you. I'm going to state that outright where obviously when you're going back and forth with a customer, let's say in this scenario, I'm going to be the customer. I want you to use sports metaphors, and I'll give you the sports metaphors in this dialogue exchange, okay? All and right. So you do it in your Adam-esque manner, either making it humorous, making it serious, making a deal, whatever it is, okay? So the first one, the first sports metaphor I want you to use is ballpark figure.
Okay.
Okay? So you've just given me a foursquare.
Mm-hmm.
You've shown me a payment. On a Nissan Versa, let's say I'm going to lease it. That lease better be under $100. But you give me
the lease on a Versa is terrible. I don't know why.
Okay, so I'm thinking it should be under $100.
Okay,
you show me a $250 lease payment. Okay,
all right.
You have to use ballpark figure. I've just basically told you that's too much.
So you want me to use a ballpark figure?
Yes.
All right. Well, Mr. Customer, this lease is going to be around $280 with $3,000 down. You know, now I know this vehicle is it's only $15,000, but
it's a lot of money. $15,000 in a 280 payment.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sorry, I can't control the prices. We can speak to the. To the bank, and you know, I'm gonna fight for you because for me it's the same.
Thank you.
What, you know, but give me a ballpark figure of what you would be able to put down today.
Okay, ballpark figure, slam dunk,
slam dunk,
slam dunk.
All right.
Okay.
You're gonna set it up, or you want me to just go?
Yeah.
Same scenario.
Just go. Or I could set it up for you if you
want. All right. I'm gonna go talk to my manager, but if we're able to drive $100 today. I'm sorry. So it's rewind.
I like it though. You're getting strong now. Right, you're getting strong. I like it. Okay, go ahead.
All right, we're gonna do $100 a month with only $500 down today. Able to drive off right now, not later on tonight, not after you call your wife, but right now. Are we able to do this? I can talk to my manager. It's gonna be a slam dunk if we can do this right now.
Ooh, strong.
Yeah,
strong. Okay. All right. The gloves are off. So, you know, this is in the case of it's a little tough. It's a little, you know, it's competitive here.
Yeah.
You know, Adam, $100 for a lease payment and $500 down. You're crazy. Who do you think you are? I should actually get a little bit meaner than that, but.
Well, sir, Mr. Customer, that's actually a great payment.
This is not a great payment.
Maybe,
Adam,
maybe
you're not looking out for my interest here. You know what?
Maybe,
fuck you.
Maybe I didn't do my job correctly. Let's go back out to the car and let me show you the features that it has. Because for $100, with $500,
Adam, you're not treating me with a whole lot. You're insulting me right
Mr.
now,
Mr. Wisco. This is the best deal we have right now. I know you're only one click away from shopping me online. So
you're damn right, I'm one click away from shopping you.
You know, we can take the gloves off and go to my manager right now. I'm fighting for you. This is whether you buy it for $100.
Nice. Okay, par for the course.
Ooh. Okay.
Par for the course. Yes, Mr. Parada. I'm here. I really like the Nissan Altima. It's gonna be great for my job working in retail.
An Altima, huh? That's a great vehicle. It has great gas mileage. You know, if we want to compare it to some other, can we pass this? I can't do this one.
Par for the course?
Par for the course.
Come on. Okay. Par for the course.
All right.
The
Nissan Altima.
Nissan Altima. I'm female. I have a child.
That's a good one.
And I'm looking to get a car. Okay, let's skip this one.
Skip that one.
Chomping at the bit.
All right.
Chomping at the bit. Someone's eager.
Yeah. Someone, yeah. Okay. You gonna set it up?
I'm between a Tundra and a Titan.
Okay.
I really love the wheels on a Tundra though. On a Tundra.
You like the Tundra? Well, we sell Tundras as well. We have a partner store down the street. The Titan is actually my favorite because I drive a Titan. And I'm, you know, emotionally attached to it, and I love.
How are the wheels?
The wheels?
Yeah,
they're great, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of wheels do they have on the Titan?
Oh, you know what? Right now we have the Bridgestones, but you know what? I'm chomping at the bit right now to get you in our Platinum Reserve because that was the 2017 Truck of the Year.
Ooh, I like Platinum. Yeah. I like that Platinum.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do one more here.
By the way, I would never use chomping at the bit. But
actually, if I was going to critique that, I would have thought that you would have put it on me. That so you like the wheels? So you're the wheels. You're really chomping at the bit at those wheels, huh?
Uh-huh. Okay,
so,
I got you.
All right, let's do. Oh, okay. Here, let me set up the situation for you. Mm-hmm. So the metaphor is Monday morning quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Monday morning quarterback. You familiar with this metaphor?
Oh, yeah.
So your manager has just is pulled you aside, said, Adam, you sold half a car this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden he starts questioning you, Adam, what happened this weekend?
Well, I wouldn't use Monday morning quarterback talking to my manager because, you know, just like...
Oh, you passed the test. Okay, yeah. Good. All right, he passed the test. All right.
So but, yeah.
No,
but no, do the salesmen talk about it, like, away from the managers? Oh, yeah, of course. Like,
yeah.
You know, they put that deal together wrong. They came out too strong with the first pencil. Yeah, these guys are fucking Monday morning quarterbacking, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, see, this is what I'm saying. More brain than bronze for you.
Right.
Okay. We're going to come right back. We're going to ask Adam some questions here with regards to the car business. Specifically, you can start thinking about this here, Adam. What so far in your tenure,
mm-hmm.
tenure's a facetious term, in your time in the car business, what problem do you see and how would you solve it? Okay?
Okay.
All right. We'll be back right after this. Is your online presence ready for growth? Do you have your idea, but you need executioners? Well, Blue Digital Marketing is the team for you. They love when their clients have the ideas, but don't know how to execute them. So they literally just tell these guys what to do. They build websites, web applications, run SCM campaigns, social media campaigns, lead gen, and more. Partners Luke and Lucy have executed on strategies from ad agencies, internet marketers, medical doctors, and your mom. Visit them at bluedigitalmarketing.com. That's BLUdigitalmarketing.com. Welcome back to the Wisco Weekly Podcast. Okay, Adam, before we actually get into the problem here of what you see in the car business and how potentially it can be solved, again, drawing upon your sports career, and I know for certain that that has helped you in life and then specifically now in the car business, do you have any mantras, any life philosophies that guide you every day, every morning that you go to work?
That's a great question. Well, I think we touched on this a little bit earlier, but I know it sounds cheesy, but
just fuck it.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's kind of what it was.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. So if now we're looking at the car business and in your time in the business, what's the one problem you see now or the one problem you have that? Well, let's start with that. What is the one problem that you see?
all right, I don't know if it's a problem, but it's just part of the business. It's us not being upfront about everything, you know.
Okay, give me an example.
Yesterday there was a scratch on the car, okay? Mm-hmm. I stood in front of it. It's the cut, you know, it was a used car, mm-hmm. you know. And of course, they're going to do a walk around. They're going to find out, you know, every little scratch. And then, you know, you got to tell them, I didn't know you wanted a brand new car. You know, that scratch comes free, you know. But, you know, it's about, they ask you questions, you know the answer to it. And you can't be honest with them all the time.
Well,
you're a little bit more vague than you would usually be.
Right.
You know, in your normal life.
But this is the business of sales now. Yeah. I mean, look, I think even if you order a product off of Amazon, mm-hmm. the company that, not let's say specifically Amazon, because they're just a retailer, but the company itself, let's say you're going to be buying a Sonos speaker. Well, Sonos is going to paint for you a picture that they have the greatest, best speaker in the world. And all of a sudden mm-hmm. you get it and it's like, well, yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It's not as great
yeah.
as you say it is.
Right,
so,
right,
I mean, this yeah. is not this just what sales is, or is there something... Is there something about it that...
I guess so. It just took some adjusting for me, you know, to, you know, where I know, for example, we have online prices.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And most of those are losers, you know,
yes.
for the company. But we don't tell them about the add-ons, about the $4,000 add-on we got to put, or the $2,000 protection package. And so misleading them to come in, it just happened yesterday, you know, misleading them to come in on an $8,000 car, and then tax and license and everything later, it's out the door at, you know, 16.
Mm-hmm. Because there was also some aftermarket item on
yeah,
there that,
well,
that increased it.
It's part of the business though.
Right.
But we don't list that on, you know, and,
right.
and sometimes I just, you know, wish that because we don't even put the prices on all of our used cars either.
Yes.
There's a few that have it. But if you go online, pretty much every car is discounted.
Yeah.
So there's a, for example, there's a 16 Altima that is $22,000 on our used lot, right? You go online, it's $13,000.
Right.
And I know that I'm not supposed to tell them about the $13,000. Oh, go on your phone and
right.
check it. You know, you can't do that.
Right.
But on the other hand, I do want to make a sale.
You know,
so you just say, don't worry about the price. Let me just show you the rest of the car. Let me show you the features that it has.
I would totally agree with you in this sense. I mean, there's definitely, it's a strong word to say, but it's probably been said many a time, and that being a shadiness to the car business in this case, where, you know, I understand on one hand, there's, especially for used cars, where that car is there's price movement on that car that's happening on a, you know, weekly basis, maybe not daily, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a depreciating asset. So the whatever is printed as a one time, of course, you can't expect to have a dealership constantly print out every day a new price on there.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely when there's almost like a huge difference in price from what is being listed on the car to what it actually would be on the internet,
yeah.
That is misleading. And I do think that these are, you know, this is actually a lot of the reasons why, for me, I'm such an advocate of the customer experience, is because there is this philosophy of the car business that still permeates, that it will eventually go away. I mean, the reality is that if it doesn't go away, those dealerships will go out of business.
Right, right.
Because as customers are getting smarter and they know what prices should be for cars because they've done all their homework online, by the time they get to the dealership, if they see a huge difference in that type of experience, they're immediately going to turn the other way and go somewhere else.
Yeah, and the next dealership is in eyesight of, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's even in earshot, like right next door. And so if we're selling a car that's $10,000 more than the car than the dealership next to us, and they're literally a 10-second walk away to going over there, you know, you have to be a good enough salesman to draw them back.
Yeah.
To then we go back to the first minute
yeah.
conversation we had, is getting them to like you to buy that car, even though it costs more on your lot than that lot over there.
And this kind of almost comes back to this whole hierarchy of the business, where, you know, you're the player, you're the salesman, right? And so it's like the general manager, the ownership group, Yeah, they're not as sensitive to you, the player on the front lines, you know, having to deal with this encounter. To them, it's like, look, do your job, sell the car, make some money. Okay, everything is done, right? There's a lot of these barriers to make that sale, and certainly when you're not as, you know, forget about being transparent. It's just a matter of being a little bit more honest through the process. I'm not going to try to have you solve that, because I don't think that can be solved, at least by you. and you know, that's definitely going to have to be more of a market shift in the way that dealerships think. And I can tell you on my hand, I talk to dealers all the time. There's still too many dealers who are in the business of selling cars, right? So that's the whole idea of, yeah, let me advertise the lowest price online, but then as soon as they get here, let me add on those markups. Let me not disclose this type of pricing, because at the end of the day, the thing that matters for the dealership is I just need to have them in the store. Yeah. Once I get them in the store, let me train my sales staff to do what they need to do and make sure that they get into a car before they leave.
Yeah,
so that's why you have all these online buying programs.
Exactly. And then we have a $500 gift card right now.
Mm-hmm.
You come and buy. But then pretty much every customer.
Wait, so this is like somebody goes online, they fill out a form, they get $500 if they come buy and test drive.
It's a commercial, it's a radio. Yeah, we do. You come in and buy, you get a $500 gift card.
Yeah.
Okay. I've seen one given out so far.
Okay.
Because even though we sell, you know, 200 cars a month, because we, you know, if they want to grind us on the price, we say, oh, okay, well we're going to throw on that gift card, that $500 we're going to give you, but now, you know, we're going to deduct it from the, you know.
From the price.
Right. And which no one's complained about, because they're like, okay, that's fine. You know, as long as you're going to give me a discount.
Right.
They just want to hear that discount.
Right.
You know? But
it is not false advertising,
no,
but misleading advertising to say that you're going $500 off. And it's almost like, well, you're almost better. This would never happen, right? But it's almost like, okay, by virtue of showing up, or you know, what's the stipulation to which they can get the $500? They have to buy a car, essentially. Is that what it is?
Sticker. Yeah.
Well, what do you mean sticker?
Well, they have to
buy a car,
yeah,
at sticker?
You know, you, pretty much. Well, we don't say that, but
right,
if you come out, I write down on the, you know, the price, and I want a customer.
I see what you're saying.
$500 right, gift card. And then when they come out, they come out with the pencil. That's a little, you know, the first pencil is always a little bit elevated.
Just a little bit. Just a
right?
little, yeah.
And their customer, oh, I can't do $6,000 today. Like, okay, well, you know, if you can do $3,000 today, and but we can't give you the $3,000 and the gift card.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
We can't give you a $3,000 discount and a gift card.
Yeah.
They're like, okay.
Well, this is all about the customer experience portion, where a lot of customers fear going into a dealership because you have the dealership staff so trained in the art of negotiation that it almost befuddles the customer to say, no, I don't want that. And more than likely, it's almost like they're kind of forced to say yes, but begrudgingly say yes to a deal. So I think this is definitely one of those things, Adam, that hopefully by virtue of bringing this issue up now, and hopefully conversations that then surround this topic that we just talked about, that there becomes more of a sudden change for those types of things. Because certainly it seems like you're enjoying your time in the car business.
Oh, I
here.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. But those are definitely the elements that can be removed, and they should be removed. I mean, I think it's one thing if it's like, look, you need to make sure that you're coming in with a white shirt. Yeah, maybe, you know, a white button-down shirt, and maybe you're like, yeah, I don't really care so much about that, but whatever, I'll deal with it because this is my employer. But then again, if it's affecting the customer experience, these are things that you can deal away with and still have someone like yourself, a professional, who can still sell a car.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Cool. Adam, anything else you want to share with us?
No, I just want to say, you know, thank you. We got in touch. I put a message on Facebook, you know, that was in the car business, about advertising to my friends and family that, you know, this is what I'm doing now. A lot of people didn't even know I was retired, because I jumped in the car business 2 weeks after I was done playing basketball, and you contacted me. It's been a great way to contact or get a hold of old friends.
Yep.
Through this business, I've sold a lot of friends' cars, and And I'll sell you your next car too, right?
Well, I think that's why I'm here, right? I feel like at the end of the day, I'm going to whatever car I drove in here, I'm going to be leaving with a Nissan here.
$500 gift card.
Well, guys, look, be sure to, Adam, where can people find you?
Right now I'm at Larry H. Miller Nissan in Corona.
Okay. Yeah. And then any social
media? You know what? I have social media, like Snapchat and all that stuff, but I hardly use it.
You better get on that stuff.
I know. I do have Instagram.
Okay. What's your handle?
God, I wasn't prepared for this. Just type in Adam Prada. I think I'm the only one there. Yeah.
All right, y'all. So check out Adam Prada on Instagram. Yeah. Check him out on Facebook. Contact him if you're in the – I mean, hell, you don't even have to be in the local area of Southern California. If you're – here you go. I'm putting out a challenge there. If you live outside California – have you done an out-of-state deal yet?
No.
Perfect. If you live outside of California, I want you to contact Adam Parada for a car. Visit Larry H. Miller Nissan of Corona. Check out their website. Or hell, if it's a new car, you don't even have to check out their website because it's a new car.
Yeah.
Call Adam up. He will put together a deal. He will go through what an out-of-state buying purchases, and he'll make it wonderful for you. You can tell he's a very moral guy. He's a funny dude. So, Adam, thank you very much for being on my show here. And, again, please check him out. You guys, this is going to be the last podcast of the year. I'll be back early January, so definitely – check out all the other episodes. Please, as always, would appreciate you liking, subscribing, rating the podcast. And I'll be bringing more episodes of the customer experience to you. All right, guys. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.